Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown.
The specials. You're wondering now, this is an encore, believe it or not. It's by Paul Williams. It is about one of my favourite groups from that time that basically made, I was wearing, but got my interest basically in all things ska. And ended up with me standing in a very, very damp Brussels watching the Scatterlights, for goodness sake, for some strange reason. So the one of the man, well, that was the band, but the man who has written a book about the specials is Paul Williams himself, the godfather of ska himself. How are you, Paul?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
Yeah, well, you know, another day on the Costa del Sol. It's better than Brixton, as we sometimes say.
It's probably warmer than it is here at the moment.
Well, yeah. Let's not do the weather report, because you'll be happy to know it is perfect. It is perfectly Coventry type weather. It is grey and miserable, and the rain got down the back. It was drixted when I got around the back of my neck this morning. For those who don't know, and pity on you people, just explain a little bit about why you've got a special affinity with the specials.
It's a question I get asked all the time. And seriously, deep down, I've no idea. I just think it's one of those perfect coming together of being at the right age, at the right time when this thing came along, and being... And it was just, for me, it was just, I call it Jamaican voodoo, the offbeat. I don't know what it is. Everybody, you know, you ask anybody and people always nod their head and, you know, to this rhythm and stuff. And it was just captivating. And of course, the imagery, which was a big part of the specials as well. Yeah. You know, the skinhead rude boy look and stuff like that. A bit of attitude, a bit of swagger. Had a bit more about it than punk a little bit, even though there's a lot of punk influences in it. And as a 12 or 13 year old, just spoke to me, you know. Perfect.
Yeah, and the thing is, as well, it's the first time that we really, because we're obviously the same age, because I was about right? It's the first time that we, you know, I'm from Stoke-on-Trent, so that's kind of West Midlands borders. Yep. But, you know, I remember I'd been to Butlins about that year, and I bumped into a bunch of, you know, West Indian kids for the first time. And yeah, we were playing the specials and everybody got into it. And it was that whole, I mean, people talk about a multicultural society, and I saw you dropped the woke in there already. But this was the first time that we'd really had, it wasn't reggae, it wasn't Bob Marley. You know, this was, and it wasn't bands like The Selector, The Specials, The Beat, UB40 before they went down that red wine thing, the less said of which the better. Really were putting a musical style together that wasn't manufactured in a way and was basically, in the best possible way, multicultural.
Exactly. And I think that's its big ethos. And, you know, just looking at the black and white check, a lot of people say, you know, what does it stand for? And there's been different things. And Jerry Dammers himself has said, you know, it's to do with black and white band members. But it's more to do with racial unity and stuff like that. And that, you know, you can across the world now, 50 years later, that black and white check is on posters and for other bands that have been influenced over the years, you know, foreign bands, the British bands, and that's still to say, well, this is what it's about and this is what we believe in. You always know from that sort of imagery what you're going to get, I think. But yeah, they were, it was a completely new thing because, I mean, Jeremy Diamonds had seen the Skinheads kicking hell out of each other at discos and stuff like that to Liquidator and things like that, and he thought if he could harness that energy and bring people together, which is, you know, for that brief moment, basically, in between 79 and 81, is exactly what they did. You know, I mean, it had its problems, don't get me wrong, and it was never a quick fix, but it certainly highlighted things that we would never talk about in those days.
And also, it was a music that engaged your intelligence as well. If you think of things like Ghost Town, Too Much Too Young, Your Message to You, Rudy, I mean, these are all songs that have got a social conscience, but you can also, as you said, get rid of some of that hormone energy on the dance floor.
It is completely. And it was, you know, for me personally, it was very educational. It was very educational because I like to, I write lyrics myself now, and I learned from listening to the Specials. That's how much a bigger influence it has. And I think, you know, it's hard not to listen to what they were saying. And again, each track, and you know, some are hard hitting, you know, and stuff like that. A lot of the songs, like say for the Specials, basically, you know, Linville on the track Why, which was the B side of Ghost Town, he talks about getting attacked by racists at the Moonlight Club, and you know, Linville was stabbed in the neck by racists and stuff like that. And the thing is, as well, you often find that all these years ahead, that their songs are still prevalent. You know, the what they talk about in the songs is still happening today.
Because if you think about it, I mean, this is a time of, you know, this is the late 70s. This is Rock Against Racism. This is, you know, the Clash at Finsbury Park. This is also Blair Peach. This is the Anti-Nazi League. But it's also, you know, the National Front having marches as well. The skinhead, and people forget about skinheads. I mean, not nasty people. But at the same time, I mean, skinheads liked a lot of that reggae music, which was, you know, a complete oxymoron.
Well, it still is. You know, we're still having problems like that now. Exactly the same things. These skinheads have got older and they just don't quite get it. Do you know? It really is an oxymoron. And, but, you know, even in the early days, or shall we say at the original time of its heyday, you know, the National Front were quite prevalent at Specials gigs specifically. And the Specials would stop gigs regularly. Mm. And throw them out, you know, or try and get something done with the security and stuff like that. And you still look at Hatfield, where they play in Hatfield, when racists and Nazis stormed the gig and started slashing people with standing knives. And I remember Terry Hall saying to me, I remember walking into the dressing room and it was like Casualty. You know, there was just people covered in blood and bandages everywhere. It was chaos. But they did their best. You know, they were up against the massive machine at the time. And the National Front were recruiting not only on the terraces at football, they were also recruiting at concerts as well, or trying to anyway. They would infiltrate gigs and, you know, and the Specials were also starting to pick up what was left of the Sham 69 army. You know, the Sham 69
Band. Yeah.
Because Sham went all the way out sort of thing. And wasn't always good, you know, but they still stuck to their roots.
It's quite. I did, about 7 years ago. I worked on a UB40 concert down here in Marbella in Estepona, and again, UB40 is a band who sort of like changed from their original sort of like setup, if you like.
Yeah.
But I'd forgotten about what a large following they had amongst the skinhead majority. And I don't know what's more frightening: skinheads in their youth, in their heyday, or when you meet a 60-year-old proper, you know, with a Fred. But and you think, oh, blimey, O'Reilly, you know.
I think. With what's going on, especially, I don't know what it's like over where you are at the moment, but in England at the moment and the United Kingdom, it's not a very nice place to be fair, socio-politically. And we are still seeing, you know, I see it on social media where people who have black and white stuff, they share special songs, the YouTube, they do all this sort of stuff, and then they will share the old fight for your country, blah, blah, blah. And my point, and I do take them up on it, you know, what point do you not get? You know, you need to be true to yourself about something. If you believe that the way we are now is the way forward, then say so. But don't be hypocritical, because it's total hypocrisy of the highest form. And to me, you know, it's like a lot. I think some people think it's just like it's nice little dance music. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that appeals more because, oh, it's lovely, it's got a bit of brass. But they're not listening to what's actually going on.
And also the thing is, this is the sort of music that engages the youth and gets them to think about stuff and then go and read stuff as well, because they were an intelligent band, and they took, you know, because they were in the charts, you know, they were on top of the pops. Yeah, mm-hmm. At a time when we had Racy and Dollar and you know, Rene and Renata, you know, and Joe Dolce, Shut Up In Your Face. And so, you know, Smashy and Nicey, and this is a guy who works in radio, trust me, they're not half mates. But what I'm saying is that people, as I said before, this was the first time that I had seen that wasn't a disco, that was UK based. So it wasn't Sly and the Family Stone. Okay. It wasn't from a disco situation. You know, it was hard hitting. It wasn't over manufactured. It was quite something. I mean, I never got to see them live because my parents were never going to let me go to a gig like that. But you know what I mean? You would see the videotape for something like that. And yeah, you would just go, you know, you would just go as a live experience, absolutely outstanding.
Well, I sneaked out when I was a young man, and, without my parents knowing, and we went to a local specials gig. I was 13.
Blimey.
We just got, I mean, I was a big lad. I was 6 foot when I was like 30. Ah, okay. So I could pull it off a little bit. Bit of a baby face, but you know. But, and a lot of my friends were a bit older, 16, 17, 18. So they had cars and stuff like that. So we would go to Bridlington, which wasn't too far from us in East Yorkshire. And I walked in and people say, well, you know, what was it like? And even now, I can smell everything, and it was terrifying, right? Absolutely. And it was all I can describe it as is a bomb going off in front of your face. Like that, seriously, in your face. And my first sort of look at the band and stuff was Terry Hall remonstrating with a bouncer with a microphone stand. And I'm like, I'm having some of this. Do you know what I mean? I'm having this large, you know what I mean? This is what it's about, the excitement.
Because one of the great things that I get to do is I get to do a lot of musicians. And I always talk about the live experience, and they always say 10 times out of 10, it's connection. When you get a live connection between the audience and you, and they get it, then there's no better feeling. And that perhaps is the thing about the specials gigs and the whole thing that specials stood for, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. I think the specials were far, far more a better live band than they ever were in the studio. Never really captured their, like you said, their live experience and the connection between audience. And they did win. They did win a lot of the audience over, even those that were, I mean, they would sit, and I remember Roddy Byers telling me, Roddy Radiation, the special guitarist, saying he would sit in the bar discussing with racists, you know, racist skinheads. I said, why, you know? And he says, I remember, you know, winning them over and stuff like that. And I think, you know, to actually do that to that extent, you know, you put yourself in a dangerous situation. And I just think it's perfect. And it sums up what Two Tone specifically and that band were all about. You know, connection with the audience and stuff like that. And they were always having kids on the stage, you know, to the point where the stage, I think it was in Holland, it collapsed.
Yeah.
You know, there's thousands of people. Because they wanted it to be, you know, if you wore a Two Tone badge or you listened to the music, you were part of the club. You know what I mean? So come on in, you know, come on in, get on this stage, you know, and stuff like that. And much to the stage manager's panic, but yeah.
Was there always going to be a finite time though for something like the specials in terms of, because it becomes, you know, there's burnout and you've said what you need to say, and you don't want to go down the, and apologies to the UB40, but you know, the way that they suddenly became, you know, from when you go from 1 in 10 to red wine, you know, and I got to know Brian Travers quite well. He was a wonderful guy.
Yeah. Lovely guy, yeah.
Lovely guy, you know, and such a laugh. And there's an evening that I can't even repeat, but anyway. and then I saw, you know, and then there are several incarnations going, but they became the 80s sort of white reggae sort of sound and quite safe, whereas people like, you know, the Beat, the Selector, and absolutely Specials, they had a message to get across. And then as the 80s kicked in and the shoulder pads got bigger, then it was always going to be, you know, there was always going to be a difference. And again, these are big bands, so there's always going to be a difference of opinion because there's a lot in them.
There is, that's it. That was the thing. A lot of people tend to think that the Two Tone bands and Specials, Madness, The Beat, The Slate, The Body Snatchers would all share a big house, all wore tonic suits and listened to Scar all day.
Yes.
And then, you know, they were all individuals, all different ranges of tastes of music. And you can hear all, especially with the Specials, well, what I know is you can hear in their tracks that the influences from every different band member. So you've got reggae in there, you've got ska, you've got punk, you've got soul, you've got everybody's influences in there. And I think the Specials were so... How can I words? It was so intense. It was so intense that like you're on about finite. I think you're right, because I think it was so intense at some point. it just goes bang. You know, I think that's just the nature of things. You know, it's all this energy. And then at some point it has to run out, I think. And that's what happened with the first incarnation, I think. And it's the same with, you know, the bands like The Bee went on and Bad Manners went on to become, you know, went into the mid-80s and stuff like that. But it was never going to be the same for them. You know, they all started, not so much Bad Manners, because they're still Bad Manners. They still sound the same now as they did 50 years ago. But personally, I'm in a band and stuff like that, and that's not how I would want to be. I'd like to progress.
But, yeah, sure.
But fair play to them, you know. And Specials, when they came back in 2009, when they did start recording new material, it was a complete follow on from where they sort of left off. Because more, if you look at those first two Specials albums, you've got the first album is an iconic, I call it an iconic snapshot in time of how things were in the UK at that time. Absolutely iconic. And then in less than 6 months, you've got an album that's got synthesizers, drum machines. Oh. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because if you look at more Specials, there's two sides to that. There's the one side, which is side A, which features for the ska fans, but side B is where they were going to go and where they were going to spread out. And you can see Jerry Dammer's vision for the future there. That's where he's going to go. The band's obviously split. They became the Special AKA, and he did the In the Studio album, which was all the jazz infusion and stuff like that. But when Jerry, of late, you know, did the Spatial AKA Orchestra, yeah, you could see actually where he was going, even back in the 80s, where he wanted to be. And stuff like that. But when the band reformed in 2009, they didn't start recording. It was like that collection with Terry Hall in. It was like carrying on from the In the Studio album. It was very clever, very intelligent as well.
Because the thing is, I mean, you get so many of these bands getting back together again, you know, and
they all do, yeah,
yeah, and then they don't have anything new to say, kind of thing. And no. Yet,
I mean, yeah. Well, a good point was Horace Panter when he said, he says, you know, when we wrote that, when we wrote those albums, we were angry young men. We wanted to change the world. And what would I write about now? I'm 60 years old. I go down the shop, I buy a pint and newspaper, and I come home and watch the telly, you know. But the Encore album really was more about them as grown adults. Do you know what I mean? They were still angry. There's some songs in there that pick up on social commentary and things like that, but they were angry. You know, there's a song about Terry Hall's depression. There's a song about how they felt about gun laws in America. So there's still a lot to say, you know, still a lot to say. And people need to realise that the Encore album in 2019 was the first album that ever went to number one.
And the thing is, though, it's like, you know, Muhammad Ali famously said, if you're still talking about the same things. If you're still talking about the same things when you're 60 years old that you're talking about when you were 20, then you haven't evolved as a human being. You know, if you're still thinking you're the oldest swinger in town, etc. So,
well, that's it. I mean, that's a perfect example. And but you know, you can still be angry about things.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could. I think the Specials are more angry about the fact that nothing really changed. You know, I mean, I think race relations had come a good distance. I mean, it's a bit of a mess at the moment for obvious reasons, yeah. But you know, I do think people say, did two-tone work? Did the harmony thing and the unity thing work? I think it did. To an extent, it did. And I know personally, from my point of view, I could have gone many different ways when I was a kid. I was on a council estate. I was, you know, not being looked after, shall we say. But they were my education, you know.
And also, did it work? Yeah, because we're still talking about it now.
Exactly.
And also, it wasn't fabricated. It wasn't a boy band. It wasn't, let's have, you know, it wasn't, let's get some, you know, this group and that group and make it a big ethnic melting pot. It was absolutely, it reflected the world that we still live in, that we still live in a multicultural world. You know,
we like, do.
You know.
And I think that's absolutely right. And that has to be noted. I think as a rule, we're all better together. You know, that's, I stand by that, and I mean that sincerely, that I do think we're all better together. And that's one of the pulling powers of Two Tone as well. And I think that's what's why, like you say, we're talking about it almost 50 years later, is the fact that it was genuine. Mm. Genuine from the heart, from people that were living these times, in these situations, in these conditions, and It spoke, and people don't seem to realise it had quite an impact. And nothing really since then has had that. Not really.
You've
had Britpop, you know, you've had your Britpop and your British stuff, but it's It's not lyrically, it's not biting enough, you know.
Yeah. Well, you eventually went down that whole sort of Mockney route, and you got locked up into Smoking Monkeys or whatever it was called. You had access to a lot of the band members as well, and you obviously got a relationship with them. You know, it must be bittersweet to talk about Special now, because of Terry and everything like that.
It is very much so.
Just a shock to everybody's system.
I've known the band I've been involved with the band probably since 2009, but I did, they had a bit of a comeback in the 90s when I worked with them then as well. But it's just that since 2009, Terry was back in the lineup and stuff like that. And it was a shame Jerry wasn't there. Mm. And they did have rehearsals with him, but they wanted to do two different things, and it is what it is. Band politics are not my business. You know, yeah, I always say you deal with that internally. We don't, because I don't think people do like a bit of scandal and gossip. It's natural. But for me, it's not my thing. But it is what it was. But when they did come back, it was a glorious reunion. And they sold out everywhere and across the world and stuff. So they were doing something right. It was. And the bands have really been really good with me. They say never meet your heroes, but I've been very, very lucky. Very, very lucky. And Terry especially, who people think is this miserable, never non-smiley, but I'll tell you what, mate, I'll tell you what, he had the wickedest sense of humour, and he laughed a lot.
And it's lovely you got a forward from Madness, from Chris from Madness,
because
again, people go, oh, well, gore blimey, governor, you know, let's have a tear-up, etc. But if you listen to lyrics like Embarrassment, for example, and Grey Day, I mean, those are, if you think, you know, they got it as well, big time. It wasn't just all about being a nutty boy.
No, I mean, Madness, I mean, people don't seem to realise, like, you know, like the song Michael Caine is about Northern Ireland, you know, and things like that. Madness are really astute and very, very clever. And people think, oh, the nutty boys. And then you get the other side of people saying, well, once after absolutely one step beyond, I wasn't interested. It went a bit pop. But they were thinking ahead. They were very, very clever, very, very astute. I've got to know a few of the members over the years, and Chrissy Boy being one of them. Chrissy's great. He's even played some of our tracks and my band's tracks. I love Madness. I think they're brilliant, and they're very, very, very clever musicians, very clever lyricists as well.
Played Marbella about 10 years ago, right? Only concert I've ever worked with on, because I do production. I got a message from the bar, and they were like, we're down to one keg of beer left. It was that sort of a party atmosphere.
That sounds like Madness.
Yeah. What are you hoping that people are going to take from? I mean, it's not just another sort of like, it was great now, and aren't we, as we all barrel towards our 60s like an out of control go-kart.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. What are you hoping that people are going to take from the book?
I just want people to realise that, you know, this band was one of the, not, you know, not just the whole story of the Specials is so colourful in every aspect. You know, the high intensity, the lyrics, the music, where they came from, what they did, where they went, what they had to say. You know, it's like, it's so, I mean, you've got a lot of bands like The Who and everybody and all that. And yeah, I get that, you know, I respect the legacy and stuff, but these are just different. And the intensity, I can't really describe it. You know, I've seen it. I've seen how intense they are when backstage for a gig, and that first thing when I walked in, I saw them live, and I thought, wow, just like mind blown, mind blown. And I want people to. And I like to think it's in that book. I've kept it sort of flowing. So we're having a chat basically. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what happened next. Hey, what happened next was this. You know, and I like that attitude sort of thing. And I think people sort of, you know, I want to tell you a story sort of thing. And it's just, I think people buy into it. And I think it covers not only the Specials story, but it also goes their individual careers after the Specials as well. So you get the colour feel, the fun boy free and all that sort of stuff as well, you know.
The book.
I hope people just get a lot from it.
The book is called The Specials. You're Wandering Now. The Specials and Encore. It's by Paul Williams. Paul, you can order it, by the way. Go to the Talk Radio Europe bookstore online. Click on the brilliant front cover and it'll be winging its way to you. Paul, if people want to find you online, I know you do a few bits and pieces. You mentioned you got a band as well. So where can people find you online?
I'm on every social media platform because I'm a fool. But you've got to be in it to win it sort of thing. I'm also the CEO of, this is that, Well, people say, are you obsessed? And obviously I'm obsessed because I'm also the CEO of a charity called the Special Act Project, which is also the name comes from the band. We run events throughout the year. We raise money for many different causes that we're also funding as well now. As we're funders. We supply stuff for a Ugandan orphanage. So we do a lot of little projects in the country. We do little satellite gigs around the country to raise funds. And then every year we do a big festival down on the South Coast, which we just had and I'm still recovering from. So, but the Specials have always, you know, they've always been behind us. And they've actually, and last year we had what was left of the band and the musicians come play a big tribute to Terry Hall and pack the place out. It was brilliant.
Brilliant. I'm presuming they just keep putting Paul Williams on the nearest search engine.
Sorry, yeah. Well, I'm actually called Paul Willow. That's my nickname. That's what everyone knows me by. So it's Williams, just W-I-L-O-O. You don't put Williams in because you won't find me.
Right, fair enough. No problem at all. Well, the book is called You're Wandering Now, The Specials and Encore. It's by Paul Willow Williams. Paul, it's been an absolute blast to speak to you today.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.